At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good evening and welcome, fellow explorers of the unexplained. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio presents Holzer's Ghosts. Tonight we're going to look at season one of the Holzer Files, episode five. This is Phantom Crew, the ghosts of the USS Constellation. This was an interesting case for us to be a part of, and one I'm excited to talk about for many reasons. One will be a little bit later on in the episode when we review evidence. This is probably the episode that irks me the most because of the response we've gotten, and not in a bad way. I appreciate everybody's honed eyes looking for evidence that we may have missed, but we're going to have a little conversation with that. I'm going to show you some of that evidence a little closer later on in tonight's program. What makes this story kind of stand out to me and is really kind of a unique story is the fact that when Hans Holzer went to visit this site with his medium, deep trance medium, Sybil Leek, over 50 years ago, this was a location that legitimately scared them off the property. They were so uncomfortable with the energy and the vibe that was coming through that Sybil Leek was not comfortable being on board. And Dr. Holzer, always aware of his trance mediums and their sensitivities, took a high responsibility with this. And they investigated, they took the stories, but they got off the ship. And she felt, as it says in the episode, that there was something very dark, very evil aboard this ship. Now, let's talk about the history of this, and we're going to talk with our guests in a few moments. The USS Constellation had many lives, a frigate, a warship. The original version of the ship was stripped down. The new USS Constellation built atop part of its bones. So this is not the original USS Constellation, but there are boards, there are beams that were part of that original ship. But it is repurposed parts from other ships and the newer Constellation, which is still very old. So this was a very impressive ship that had, as I said, an expansive lifespan, covering two different nautical boats that became blended into one. And that may explain why there's so much activity. The blood, sweat, and tears of the men stationed aboard this ship and what they had to go through. Literally absorbed into what we refer to in this episode as the stone tape theory. Every experience almost time locked in this one location. And then you've got it on water, which, you know, the big belief system is that it's very conductive. Water is very conductive for the paranormal. It's an energy form. And when you have this ship moored in this water, water on both sides, some believe that keeps ghosts from being able to leave because the water defies that. Now, I don't really understand that, and we'll talk with our guests a little bit about that as well tonight to see if they have some concepts about this. I'm excited to be back with Holzer's Ghosts next week. We're going to take a look at Lambert Castle, which was a really interesting story that involved possible reincarnation, spiritual activity. We even brought in a certified hypnotherapist, Damian Bertrand, to kind of do a past life regression for Barbara David. And that was a really powerful episode. So if you haven't watched it yet, make sure that you watch the episode at the castle, Lambert Castle, next week before we do our live program here on Thursday night and kind of assess that story for yourself. But it's really well worth visiting. It's on Travel Channel and on Discovery Plus, where you can find all of season one and season two of The Holzers available now. They are releasing new episodes to you on TV that didn't get to see the last block of about seven episodes. Every Saturday, they're releasing a new episode. I've also been told that they're releasing Holzer Files episodes from season one that are repackaged. I think they're called Reopened. So you might see, for instance, this case, Phantom Crew Reopened. And it's kind of a pop-up video version of the show where we will be popped in and insert and talk about different elements of the show. Kind of like this broadcast platform, only this we can go a lot more in depth than those. We just give little nuggets of wisdom and information throughout the investigation. So make sure you set your recorders and look for that. It is The Holzer Files Reopened. Those will be the episodes you want to check. Tonight joining us is a longtime friend of the show. He has been a guest on numerous occasions, and I believe I even talked to him right after we filmed this episode. And he's back with us tonight. He is a magician. He is a paranormal researcher, author, lecturer. He is back with us this evening, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Vince Wilson. Vince, welcome back to the program, sir.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here. It's I'm really excited to be on your streaming show here. Thank you so much for having me again.
It's very great exciting to have you here. Now, you are a historian. Mm-hmm. You love the history of that area. You know about the constellation. When did you first visit the USS Constellation?
Probably when I was a child, actually. Schools in Baltimore would take trips to the USS Constellation on a regular basis, downtown Baltimore and other historic locations in Baltimore City. And the USS Constellation was certainly one of them. I think my earliest memory of it, though, is my grandfather taking me on a Constellation because he was in the Navy during World War II, and he's a huge Navy buff. He would take me down there and go on all the naval ships that were parked in the harbor. That was my earliest memory of the USS Constellation. And years later, of course, I would do a couple of overnight investigations there myself.
Now, let's dig into some of the history here. As I mentioned in the opening, this ship had many lives. Mm-hmm. What do we know about the original iteration of the USS Constellation? What was that vessel?
Well, it was built in the 1700s. It was as you stated earlier, it was the original Constellation was built for the in time for the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. It never really saw combat, though. And it was used for training purposes for several decades, and eventually was scrapped and left for, just thrown in a scrapyard, basically, and used for building other things. So there might be historic buildings in Baltimore made out of pieces of the Constellation, for example.
Wow.
Yeah, think about that. And of course, it was a longstanding naval tradition to take support beams from older ships, that especially if it held that name, if they built a new ship with that name, and one of those beams would be taken and built into the bow of the new ship, which is what happened with the USS Constellation when the new ship was built, in the later 1800s, which became the Constellation, which currently sits in the harbor and the one that you investigated. That it is believed to be part of the front stern of the ship in the lower regions of the ship. That there is an original piece of that ship, and it goes to, you have to ask that question, can memories, you're talking about stone recordings, for example, that theory is that can memories from the previous ship be transferred to the new ship? And it's also a good reference to the ship of thesis, the philosophical debate, that if you how many pieces can replace before it's not the same ship anymore,
right?
For example. So any WandaVision fans know that reference.
So the original ship certainly had a long life. It was used for training purposes. It was used for transport. They were kind of hired pirates back in those days as well, correct? I mean, when these guys were out there, they weren't the pirates we think of, the scallywags, but they were kind of licensed or like, what's the word I'm looking for? They were actually hired pirates.
Yeah,
right?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. The word escapes me. Someone in the comment section can tell us that, but yeah, you're right. There is a special privateer. That's what it is.
Privateer. That's
privateer.
Yes.
Yep. That's great. So the privateers, would raid, French and British ships, during the late 1700s, going into the early 1800s, as a matter of fact. And this kind of led to part of what led to the War of 1812 to some degree. Now, the new ship, I think, had a more amazing history when it was helping stop slavery from Africa in the United States. So it patrolled the African coast and prevented slave ships from bringing slaves into the United States at that time. So it had a very honorable history in that regard.
Now, obviously, and don't worry, Jim, we're going to get to you in a few moments here. I just want to kind of set the stage for this haunting and this story. Now, we talked in the episode about Captain or Commodore Truxton.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was a no-nonsense, no-holds-barred captain, right? There were rules. When you were out on the sea, these were the rules we lived by. And if you messed things up, and you started to appear as a Jonah or a bad luck person, they would shun you, abuse you, treat you poorly on these ships. And then we talked about the fact that one of his cadets had fallen asleep when he was supposed to be on watch. His punishment was to be run through with a saber. Then he was tied to the front of a cannon and blown apart.
Yeah, it's insane if they had the terminology at the time, they would have probably referred to himself as an alpha type or alpha male, for example. You know, he was not a pleasant person by any stretch of the imagination. And in at least one case, there's a story of him strapping a person who fell asleep during his job at the post, and there's written records of this. You know, they had kept a very detailed journal, strapped him to a cannon and blew him to pieces, just like you said, all over the deck. So you got that sailor's haunting that ship for sure, because you can imagine that's about as violent a death that you can have. And if you believe that violent death can like blast your remnants of what you are literally and figuratively and metaphysically into the ship. Yeah. It's like, it's insane to think about that. I believe it was aimed toward the sea, but I'm sure some of it got, there's somebody mopping up later on, I imagine.
Yeah. Angela states that the ship is your life. You live for the ship. You do. And it was like almost treason if you were to fall asleep, because as they said in the episode, you could have been boarded. You could have gotten in a lot of trouble. The enemies could have gotten you. They could have shot you out of the water. So there had to be this information. They had to have trust in each other. And once that trust was broken, it was a bad situation. Now, Truxton's presence is so powerful that in the 50s, there was a photographer on board the ship, and he took a very famous photograph. On the deck of the ship, he took a photograph. There was nobody present for this photograph, and this is what they captured. A man, and I don't think that's a tri-corner hat, but that is one of those Commodore, Captain Crunch hats you'll see. And you see him in full regalia as always walking across the deck. This is a really compelling and interesting photograph. Do you know anything about this? Do you know if it's ever been debunked or if there's ever been anything? I couldn't find anything when we did this episode that showed them punching a hole in the theory of it.
No, it's technically never been debunked. You know, it's a very interesting photograph. You know, they have reenactors on the ship, of course, but they are all dressed as, just the lowest ranking sailors. There's no admiralty or captain dress on the ship at any point in time. So that kind of dismisses that. If you really want to be a skeptical jerk about it, you could say that maybe some fanboy who likes cosplaying as an admiral came on there. But what are the odds of that happening? You know,
in the 50s, when the guy was taking photographs,
exactly.
A professional photographer knew the deck was empty and was taking different photos that showed up. Mm-hmm. Now, an interesting inside note, Vince, we tried to reproduce this. We got the exact type camera that was used. We got the film, we went on board, we took the photographs, not one photograph turned out on the entire roll of film, not one. And it was blown out. Now we had gotten the film from a professional. We knew how it was loaded. It was all taken. We were literally taught step by step how to take the pictures with this camera. We got nothing from it, which was one of the first strange bells for us. The ship is gorgeous, folks. If you haven't had a chance to go see it, the USS Constellation is in Baltimore in the harbor there. It's beautiful. There's bars, restaurants, Ripley's, believe it or not, right across the street. There's a lot of great things to go see. And the ship itself is really impressive when you get there to take a look at it. Unless, of course, you're there late at night and run into these three characters. We had a great time going out. And this is right near where they caught that photograph of the Admiral strolling across the floorboards. You said you went as a child and walked through there. At what point did you become aware that it was a haunted ship, Vince?
Well, you go on there and you just feel that, you know, I'm sure you've certainly been into historic locations, museums, right, that sort of thing, and felt nothing. It's like, oh, I'm here. It's enjoying the architecture, the building. You know, that happens. Right. But then again, you're in places in which there's an atmosphere that just you can feel. It's tangible to some degree. And the Constellation has that. So inevitably, you're going to ask someone, have you ever had an experience here? Have you ever had something happen, or have you ever felt like this place was haunted? Some of the crew won't talk about that. Some will tell you no way. And then if you find the right person, they will tell you yes. And they'll, of course, they'll preamble it with officially, I can't endorse this. But,
right.
You know, but we've, you know, there's of course, the Constellation is one of the most interesting haunted places in the world because there is a written record in the captain's journal, the logbook, of a haunting taking place on that ship. As far as we know, the only known historic U.S. record of that happening anywhere.
That's pretty amazing, right? So you've got this historic record. You know this story has been out there. Hans Holzer, as I said, came out about 50 years ago to investigate and quickly left the ship with Sybil Leak in tow because she felt something overwhelming. She wasn't the only one that felt something overwhelming. And that brings in our next guest. And folks, I want to start this by mentioning our guest is Baltimore police. This guy has seen things. He has been witness to things that many of us would cower and stay in our rooms not having to deal with. But he is forced to go out and do this because of his position with law enforcement. Jim's been a good friend of mine for, I think, 12, 13 years in attending phenomenology and being at these events with us. He was a special guest. I was surprised. I didn't know that he was our experiencer when we did this episode. So it was a happy reunion, but joining us now, Big Jim Jones. Jim, welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for being here, buddy.
Well, thank you for having me on and welcome to see you guys again.
Good. Jim, you were how old when you visited that ship?
I was 10 years old. I had the first experience going down to the Constellation. It was part of a dual package because they used to have a cruise ship. It was called the Port Welcome. And so we would go aboard the Constellation, kill time on there, and then we'd go out on the Port Welcome, which would take us around through the Inner Harbor, out into down by where Francis Scott Key had been on board the ship to see the bombardment of Fort McHenry and see where he penned our nation's national anthem, and then work our way out to Sparrows Point, which was the old Bethlehem Steel Mill and shipyards. And it also had it had history there as well, because that was where a lot of the Liberty ships that actually helped win the war for America in World War II was built. So that day, like any other day, it was quite interesting. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, you were young. You were there as a field trip. You get to kind of explore. You and your friends break away. Now, let's talk about that. You break away, get a little bit of time on your own because, you know, they're all waiting for this next part of your journey. You go down near the brig area. And how many of there are you?
There's three of us. It's me and two other friends of mine.
Are there any employees down there?
Not at that time. I mean, we heard at that time they were still working on the ship because it was in bad shape. I mean, it needed constant repair until when they did the refurbishing probably about 20 years ago. At that time, they had volunteers on board, and they stopped around the time when we all got on board, and you have a bunch of fourth graders getting on their running ramp, and they were worried. It's just kind of like, okay, we got to shut everything down, try to make it as safe as possible, let them go through, and then we'll go back and do what we're going to do.
Right.
At that time, it was just me and my friends, and we broke away from the group, and we just started exploring on our own.
Now, you get down to the brig. Walk us through your experience again. For those that haven't had a chance to see the episode or did but might have more questions, please tell us what happened to you.
What happened was we had gotten away from the group after they took us on a tour. They showed us all the nominal places where they would take you through. The docent would take you through and explain where the captain, this is his quarters, and they would show the gun deck and everything else. And then as we were getting ready to embark for our second leg of the journey for our field trip, the Port Welcome was late coming back because they were refueling. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they told us to meet up there at the ship's wheel. And when we heard the Port Welcome come in, they would sound off the ship's horn and let us know that it was back in at that time. Mm-hmm. And then we just took off. So we started going and we started looking at places where we didn't go on tour. I mean, basically in storage areas, anything we could actually gain access to. We were the, I guess, goober to ghost chasers type of thing. If you were looking at that,
sure.
Going and playing in there a little bit. And, so we got down to the deck where the brig was. And, as we go down, we were hearing just shortly before that, we started hearing like a hammering. I'm going to do this on my workbench and it's going to shake, hopefully not shake my camera, but you'll hear it was odd. It wasn't like hitting, a nail or working on boards. It wasn't really a rhythm to it. And it really didn't have the echo like it would be if you worked on wood. When you work with wood, it has a certain type of resonance to it. And then as we looked down there, we got a bit closer. The next thing you know, what I saw come out of the brig area through the where the doorway and what would have been they had like a wooden bars coming down. There was an arm that came through. And it was translucent. It wasn't solid. You could kind of see through it, but you knew it. But it definitely looked like a man's arm coming out.
So you're again, I want people to pay attention. It was translucent. So it was partly transparent, partly like lighting. And you see it reaching through the bars at you, mm-hmm. grasp like it's trying to grab. So you could tell this isn't somebody in there playing a prank on you.
Yeah, it wasn't nobody playing a prank on it. And I'll get to that in a moment. Let me tell you, when this thing reached through, mm-hmm. it come through, and it was like it was grabbing from something, and then all of a sudden, it started like it was motioning towards for us to come towards this where this one part of the brig was. So, and we were figuring, hey, somebody's playing a prank on us, so we're going to go down there. Once we get down to go into the cell area right there, nobody. Nothing. Like I said, this thing, after it did the motion of it, it was pointing and like beckoning you towards it, it pulled back. We go in there, nothing. At this point, that's when you hear it on back of your head, and we looked at one another, and it was like, run. That was it. And all I heard was the heartbeat in my head, and basically our shoes on the deck of the ship and running. I mean, basically, and I'm not the swiftest of I'm not no Carl Lewis by any stretch of imagination. I'm
right.
Like a poke machine. And I'm running down. I'm the last of the guys running down there. But we're all keeping up. I mean, I'm basically keeping up. I'm almost grabbing a hold of somebody's belt and just like drag me along a little bit. We get down to the steps going up. We're kind of like looking over my shoulder. At this point, now there is like a mist. It's like a dark mist. You can't see the other end where the lighting was. And it was a foggish kind of a thing, and it was coming towards us. I remember looking down, and you know, there's openings between the steps going up, to get out of that lower decks.
Right.
And so I'm trying to make sure I hit every one of these. I'm like a trip over my own shoestrings in that.
Right.
Well, this, it washed down looked like a tidal wave, kind of a hit. Like when it brings in, it crashes at the bottom of the staircase, mm-hmm. and kind of like it was rising. Well, at this point, I just kept looking up, and we just kept going up, up, and up. And we got to the gun deck, and we were grabbing like one another, and like, don't say anything. We're not supposed to be in there. You know, it's just like, keep your mouth shut. Get up there, and we're standing there at the wheel, and everybody's like, where have you guys been? We got lost. We don't know what we're doing. And then, of course, when we got over there on the port welcome, we all got down. I remember going back towards the stern of the ship, and we're back there. I'm like, you don't say a word. Nobody knows anything because we weren't supposed to be in there. Because
right.
Let me tell you something. If my father knew I was down there goofing off like that, there was a belt waiting for me when I got home. So, I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, but that's what happened that day. And like I said, when the time I came down and did the interview with you, that was the first time I actually been down that below the gun deck. Because I've been on board the ship since then, but I never went below the gun deck. That was something that always stuck in my mind, and it was an experience I'll never forget. Let me tell you,
you could see it still physically affected you being aboard the ship. Now, we had tried to get your friends that were on board; they wanted nothing to do with this, right? They have no interest in talking about it anymore.
Not at all. No, actually, when I called them, I actually contacted them after I was contacted, and it's like, and one of them actually came up there and said, you know, you just caused me to have the nightmares all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, here it is, you know, 40 years later, and you're going to take and have me go through all these same nightmares again. And so, I mean, there's a few choice words, things of that nature, but it was like, no, we're not going to, if you want to do this, you do that. You tell it the way it happened, you know, what happened to us.
Cindy Brown pops up with a good question. How do you process those noises psychologically if you don't see anybody that's making them, but you can hear it?
Well, one aspect, I do work with wood. I build guitars, cigar box guitars, and that. I work with wood and I listen for certain resonance. And like with that noise, the hammering or that slapping that was going on, and it didn't ring off you know, that wood they had on board the ship, they used oak, they used teak, things like that. I mean, these timbers were ancient wood, mm-hmm. and it would have a certain resonance to it. And even back then, you know, after all years I've worked with wood, I mean, it you tend to see, it wasn't natural. It was something far beyond that, as far as I was concerned.
You were affected while we're standing there. And folks, just so you know, I mean, when we do this, first of all, I do want to go on record. You'll notice I do not sport my leather jacket in this episode because it was, how hot did it get out there for that? Do you guys remember? It was up there.
Yeah.
It was upper 90s, but of course in Baltimore, you have high humidity anyway.
Oh,
so, I mean, you could have had 80% humidity and 90% or 90-degree weather. I mean,
we were dying down there, Jim. We had towels off to the side. We had to keep blotting ourselves because it was so steamy in that little area.
Remember, they kept pounding my nose all the time because I was just washing away with my sweat.
Yeah, we were shining like crazy. Now, we start hearing knocking around. Now, what's important, folks, is when you see that scene and we stop and we're looking, we have security outside the ship keeping people off the ship. Mm-hmm. The only people there are the people down with us, and one security upstairs keeping an eye on everything. We're hearing that bumping around, everybody's accounted for, nobody's moving. And we're hearing, it's like it starts screwing with you, Jim. Like it starts making the banging noises and it's getting, physically it looked like it was affecting you. You look like a kid who was just saw a hand go back underneath his bed. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Pretty much. I mean, it caught me because it was right by my head. If you remember, it was right. We were actually below the waterline on board the ship, and here it was. And it was actually about 2:30, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it, when we did that part of the episode?
I can't remember specifically, but yeah,
that was the last one to be interviewed, and it was when that happened up there. I'm looking around and just like, you know. I'm going to keep it G-rated. I don't want to use pop punk, but but you know what I said that time, like, you know what's that going on? Mm-hmm. But it reminded me that it was just going back to that day, the same smells, the same atmosphere. Although it was in October when we went down there in 1974,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that at that time, you know, this wasn't the weather reason wasn't that far off on it. So here it was this trying to intimidate the big kid that was 10 years old and try to, mm-hmm. you know, freak me out and try to shake my, you know, test my metal, I guess, you know?
Well, and it's, you know, I remember having a conversation with the producers. They were like, I hope Jim will come back for a reveal. I don't know. After watching him, they were a little concerned that you might be like, nope, I've had it. I'm done. I'm tapping. And I said, Jim's a cop. Jim's seen a lot of stuff. He'll be on board. If he for some reason is going to bail, Vince and I will call and shame him into being back on board. But you came back like a champ. Now let's talk about this. Vince, you've heard these type of claims of people seeing things, manifestations aboard the ship. We showed the photograph. I'll pop that up again just for people that might not have noticed that this was taken in 1955. And they were just doing some great outlying shots of the ship when they caught this photograph of what looks like Commodore Truxton making his way across the floorboards. And I know docents and the historians try to stray away from the ghosty angle. At least a lot of them did in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and they just wanted to stick with the facts of history. When did, in your opinion, they start kind of embracing their place in paranormal history as well?
I think they realized they can't deny it. You know, it's, for example, it's part of historic record, as right. we talked about earlier. It's in that logbook that a actual paranormal event happened in the ship. So it became part of the record at that point, and they just could not deny it anymore. They had to embrace it or just embarrass themselves. It was brought up all the time. You don't want to dismiss people that are coming in genuinely curious about that. And I think another way they look at it is that it's a great way of accidentally introducing people to real history. You know, you let a ghost story in and they have, you know, that takes 5 minutes to talk about, and they hear 45 minutes of the amazing history and rich, vibrant past of the USS Constellation.
Right.
So I think that helped them embrace it more.
Now, you know, I thought to myself, all right, this ship saw a lot of things, like you said, from being a frigate to a warship to being a cruiser to keep slave trade down and stop those incidents from occurring back in the day. And being licensed privateers, which is basically licensed pirates to go out and do some things. So there was a lot that had been seen aboard the ship. I thought for sure we were going to be running into a lot more residual effect at these things. Because even, Jim, when you said you saw it, it was almost like the arm was reaching for something that was already there and then kind of beckoning. And then you started to feel like, no, it was intelligent and it was messing with you. Then it started following you, that black shadow ducking around, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm on board. I'm like, all right, I think we're probably dealing with residuals. But the fact that Cindy was picking up on activity, and when we're starting our investigation and we're on that top deck and we start hearing banging from below, we were all a little shocked. And, you know, I think, Vince, I think you mentioned it in the episode. This ship is moored. It's not rocking. It's not pitching. No. It's secure.
Yeah, it's absolutely secure. First of all, the water there is mostly calm, even except for the roughest weather. And it is completely moored there. You're correct. They actually have bumpers under the water to keep it in place because it's an old ship. So they can only bring it out for the smoothest weather if they tow it into the harbor
right.
for a tour around. And they bring it right back and dock it up again. And it was actually one of those investigations in which I myself encountered the swaying hammocks, for example.
Right.
You know, it would say, and they're swaying out of order. It's not like they're moving with waves or anything like that. There was none of that happening. They just started, and they would stop like that, like on a dime, like all of a sudden they would just come to a complete standstill.
Now, you know, what's funny is we're all buddies. We've all seen each other, worked with each other, been at conferences together. But sometimes even when you hear your buddies telling you a ghost story, part of you is going, yeah, you did, Vince. Come on. Yeah, you saw multiple hammocks swinging in different directions. And it's not like you're calling you a liar, but it's so hard to conceive of these things. And I'll tell you what, when we go in there and we're doing our investigation, we're all kind of getting distracted in different ways. There were some things that were cut out. You know, Shane saw that figure by the cannons and he said it looked small and like it was peeking up over and then it would sit back down and then peek over. And at one point when we were in between, I think they were swapping batteries on the cameras. As we're doing that, I heard this giggle and Shane and I both snapped our heads at the same time and you saw the shadow stand up and run. But everybody's got cameras off and putting on battery packs and we're like, what the flip? And it was really that I was like, that isn't residual. Something's toying with us. So when I, you know, everybody beats me up because I send Shane to the scariest place. But let's face it, Shane's anxiety level kind of matched Jim's at the age of 10. So I thought he'd be a good place sitter in the brig of the ship because he brings that kind of anxiety and angst about what's going to happen. And knowing the stories kind of gets in his head even more. So I wanted him to really kind of sit in there and see it. But I wanted to be on this level where we had seen things moving. I wanted to know that it wasn't an accident of a camera moving and somebody's shadow falling in front of me. I just wanted that alone. And Cindy's like, I'm going down to the berthing quarters. And that's where all the hammocks are and where they had the medic bays set up and such. We're all hearing these distractions. And I start, as the camera guy and I are there, our camera guy, Rob, who is with me, as we're setting up, and I'm like, I want to start a sweep on this. He goes, behind you. And I turn around and you see this figure kind of duck and like it's moving away. So I'm like, let's go. So we're following this and you could hear footsteps around the deck. And we're walking around looking for wherever this thing's at. And then something dripped on me. And I had a real Amityville horror, holy shit. because I looked up and you could see it briefly. They cut away from it because we did discover what it was. But I look up and there's these red droplets. And I put my finger on it and rub it and it looks like blood. And my first inclination was, oh shit, it's bleeding. This is going to be really a bad possession case in a few minutes. And I'm like, whoa, I go, is this blood? And I'm showing it to the camera guy. And he goes, I think so. And we look up and there's just, it's everywhere and it's running. And I was terrified. We found out later, and this is why it didn't make it into the episode, that it's the sealant and stuff from the wood and the heat and that humidity just makes the stain drip sometimes. But it was freaking me out. And so when I stopped and I'm no longer giving attention to this, what I believe is a child moving aboard the ship, and I start hearing footsteps running above me, I've got in my one hand, I've got, I think my recorder, and then the other one I've got like a K2 meter or something. And as I'm standing there and I'm talking to Cindy, I'm like, man, you got to get down here. Something latched onto my arm and it was on this arm right above this tattoo, just clamped on me. Now I'm a dad. I've got, you know, 8 of my own kids. I've been bitten many times by children. I've got 5 grandchildren who've bitten me at one point or another. So I know what it feels like. And this sucker clamped on and bit. I couldn't move my arm. It was literally like something locked onto my arm and was holding. Because when I tried to pull away, I couldn't even pull away at first. That freaked me out. Really made me uncomfortable being aboard that ship. And I finally let go. And Cindy comes over. And when I pulled back my sleeve, and I'll pull this up. I made sure to have a copy of this to show everybody today so they could have a closer look. So if you're watching, this is why you should watch the video, folks, the live stream, so you can see these things. There's the bite marks on my arm. And it was very pronounced. Unfortunately, the picture, because I was trying to take it with my cell phone, isn't it? But you could see the teeth marks in the upper part. The bottom was like where he clamped on. But you could see the individual teeth marks, and it was a small bite. It looked like the bite radius was about this big on my arm. So it's small. Now, a lot of people, Vince, are asking, why a kid? Why would there have been kids aboard the ship? There were cabin boys, correct?
That's correct, yes. That was completely not unusual at the time. There were kids as young as 12 on that ship, usually around 13 and a little older, but not much older. Mm-hmm. So it was not uncommon for kids. And the kids who were so desperate about the adventure of you know, going out in the ocean, that sort of thing, would of course lie about their age. So you might have had even younger people out there who were just a little tall for their age, for example. You know, one of the ghosts of the ship, of course, is a child, you know, from that often peeks behind the cannons and hammocks on the ship.
Let me see here. Christina Lantis, I got to jump to this real quick, Jim. I'll make you nervous. Dave, when you review this, you will hear whispering when Jim talks. One whisper said, "We could keep you there." So apparently we're getting EVP on this episode. Christina Lantis claims we'll come back and I'll double check that. So Jim, you've got ghosts, just to let you know, something apparently is there messing with you. Well, yeah. Again,
he's used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jim is a paranormal investigator as well. I do want to put that up for people. Again, if you'd like to find more information on Vince Wilson, go to ghosttech.com. And if you're interested in and you live in the Baltimore or vicinity and you've got paranormal activity taking place, Jim and his organization are happy to take a look at it. Here's their website, PRISMD.net. And we'll have those links on today's program guide as well. So for those of you that aren't watching the live video, you'll be able to find it in the attachment for this episode. We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll continue talking a little bit more about this episode, going deeper. We'll take some of your questions. So if you have questions, we haven't gotten to them, just re-ask every couple of minutes. And then I will make sure that we can try to square away and get all of those answered in today's program. I can't remember if I mentioned it last week, but I want to thank all of you that have chipped in and helped. My son raised over $7,200 for the Special Olympics with the Polar Plunge because of you, the diehard Darkness Radio audience and Holzer fans. So thank you so much. We set a new goal. Next year, we're going for 10 grand. Let's hit it. And this was during the middle of a pandemic year, and we were able to raise $7,200 for the Special Olympics, which is great. So thank you very much for that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more with our guests, Vince Wilson, Big Jim Jones, me, your host, Dave Schrader, right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
And welcome back to the program. Thank you for tuning in. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis back engineering the program at home base. Thank you for doing this, Tim, and making these episodes available every Friday. Remember, you can always listen to the best in paranormal talk radio every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. DarknessRadio.com. You can find more information. Just ask any of your streaming devices and you can find us. You can listen to the best paranormal talk radio on just about every podcast platform out there. 15 years in, now into our 16th season on the air. So thank you for all the love and support over the years. Folks, you keep asking, I'll keep selling. I've got it. You can grab my package. I've got my The Other Side book, A Ghost Hunter's Guide. It is a quick, comprehensive kind of how-to guide, everything from how to put together a paranormal team to what are ghosts, how to protect yourself, demonology. That's right. I do a chapter on demonology that got the stamp of approval from John Zaffis. This book also dedicated to the memory of Dr. Hans Holzer. We wrote this book shortly after he passed away. You'll also get an autographed Holzer Files card. That's right. You'll get that. And this is the new hottest trend in the market. Everybody wants a Darkness Radio decal, so you can put it on your vehicle or you can put it on your computer, laptop, whatever you want. The entire package, $20 plus $5 shipping and handling. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. My lovely wife will send you out a PayPal invoice. Once you paid it, I will sign it and ship it out to you and get it taken care of. All right, enough with the infomercials. Let's get back to the show. Today, we're talking about Holzer's Ghosts, Phantom Crew, Season 1, Episode 5, The Ghosts of the USS Constellation. Vince Wilson, researcher, historian, and magician on hand with us. Also, paranormal investigator, Baltimore police officer, Big Jim Jones on hand with us. Jim, I just want people to understand, I mean, with the things you've seen in your career in police work, there's horrific things. And there's got to be moments when you've had to draw your gun when you're thinking, oh, what's going to happen next?
Absolutely.
How do you measure that against your memory of being that little boy aboard the USS Constellation and seeing this and having something chase you up those stairs?
Well, it has to revert back to training, I guess, if you will look at it that way. You as you grow older, you know, you're supposed to grow wiser. You know, going from that 10-year-old kid that was scared, basically, you know, less to the person who I am today. The same thing happens in law enforcement. Things change daily. I mean, the things I've seen suicides, I've seen auto wrecks. I mean, I've seen more death than I can actually count my hand. On one hand, before I got in law enforcement, and even during while I'm going into my 26th year in law enforcement,
which I know is not easy to be at this point in our history. So thank you for doing what you do, Jim, and for choosing to elect to stay doing this in a very volatile time in our history.
Absolutely, especially after what we went through back in 2015 with the riots. I mean, right. you know, doing all of that. But how it changed me as it goes along, then you start developing coping mechanisms in one aspect. Also, you through your personal experiences as you move on through your career, you start building this suit of armor, in other words, because you have to start trying to look at things in a different light. You always try to get as much information as you possibly can. That's the best way I can describe it.
Right. But, you know, reverting back, I mean, is that still one of the scariest moments of your life, even after everything you've seen as a police officer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, being the kid there with two friends of mine who they were basically rough and tumble. I mean, we all, you know, right. We played football together, everything else like that. For them and myself to literally, we had to change our underwear by the time we got off the Fort Welcome. I'll put it to you that way. After after everything was done and over with before we went back to school. You know, this is, it says something. I mean, It was something that it blew my mind. To this day, it's still, even after we went through the reveal and everything about that, and actually, then we have more information, it still brings the hairs up on the back of my neck.
Right. Angela Pettit says, when you and Jim were on the ship, do you remember if you heard or saw anything when taping the show? Because I thought I did. Well, we did hear something. We stopped, as a matter of fact, because we could hear the banging. I don't remember seeing anything at that point, but I definitely heard, we could hear something banging and going around right by us. I love this comment. Doubleday Clement says, if you're a starving kid at sea, what would you eat? A boiled leather bee, a dead rat, or C, Dave Schrader's arm? Obviously, my arm is a much more tasty thing. Now, Vince, talking about children aboard, these young children, and we were actually told sometimes cabin boys were as young as 10 years old. They would be on board the ship, and they were really given the worst jobs, cleaning, dealing with bathroom detail, all of that. And then, unfortunately, some of them were molested. And if they were going to tell, that was frowned upon. Of course, I don't even want to call them, a member of the Navy, because that's not what they really were during those privateer times and during that. But these guys would abuse these children. And if they got lippy, they might kill them. And
yeah, it certainly happened.
Yeah.
The spirit of the cabin boy that's often seen on the ship has a long gash from probably a cutlass or a dagger going straight across his face. Like, it's a horrible, gruesome cut that has been reported by multiple witnesses over the decades on that ship. It is hard to tell because he would have been the lowest ranking sailor on the ship. Right. So it's hard to tell exactly. And those outfits sort of didn't change very much from the late 1700s and the mid 1800s. So it's hard to tell. Was he a spirit from the original ship, or is he a spirit from the newer ship that was built later on?
Right.
We don't know for sure. So it's really hard to tell if that spirit is 200 years old or 160 years old or whatnot. But yeah, it's from every report that has been made over the decades of this spirit on the ship, it is a gruesome, bloody cut directly across the face, which clearly resulted in the death of that child.
Now, talking about the evidence in that episode, we captured something that surprised me. I told production when we started, I said, listen, I want to go along for the ride. I want to have fun with the show. I will not deal with you guys faking evidence. I don't want, and they're like, nope, you guys get everything. So the footage we capture, everything in our cameras goes to Shane's room. He scans through it all, scrubs through it all, looks for these pieces of evidence. And I told them, we're not going to show orbs. I'm not going to show little lights starting around, because most of them are bugs, moisture, or dust. And, I know there are a lot of orb purists out there that want to fist fight me over it. And that's fine. You can have your beliefs. I just have a hard time believing that my soul comes back as a speck of light that can only be seen with an IR light. If it's truly an energy form, it should be able to illuminate on its own. If I see, which I have and other people have, if I see a light anomaly floating around with my naked eye, that's impressive. But these little specks zipping around, don't do it. Shane tells me, I gotta show you a piece of evidence, Dave. And I know you're not going to like it at first. And I said, all right. So he puts it on, and all of a sudden I see this orb come around and it starts moving. Now, what I thought was weird is it wasn't like a regular orb that just kind of swiftly moved through there or zigzagged and zipped through it. The way it moved, it almost looked like legs walking as it made its way down the birthing deck. And as it got to the end and it passed one of the hammocks, all of a sudden you see the hammock just start swinging on its own. Now, it wasn't a violent swing, but you could see it. And as you pointed out earlier, Vince, we're inside the ship. You're a couple layers down. There's no breeze, no cross breeze in that area. And the ship's not moving. So how one hammock all on its own starts to swing is pretty unique to me. So that made the orb more impactful to me. It was bigger. It seemed to be walking, shuddering. And then when it passed a physical object, that it manipulated that. What was your first take on it when you saw that piece of evidence, Vince?
Oh, it was incredible. You know, first of all, let's set the scene a little bit. These hammocks are suspended from, a lot of them, the same beams. It's not like it's a different bow or something like that, or a different section. They're attached by the same process, the same pulleys, the same beams, the same ropes. A lot of them are tied together so you can drop them and pull them up together at the same time. So there's no reason why one hammock amongst all these other hammocks, swing independently of each other, stop and go like that. So it's crazy to think that, watching that happen and experiencing that and watching the footage later on and reviewing the evidence, it's just hard to wrap your mind around. And when that happens, you can feel atmosphere of the room change and become almost thicker and like I said earlier, tangible. You know, it's like you definitely know something is happening or about to happen.
Now, what did you make, though, of the orb phenomena? And the screen didn't do it justice because it's a light flickering and the camera's watching it and going through its own lines of resolution as it's filming it. It kind of lost some of its luster. But if you saw it on the big screen like we were watching it, and Jim, you remember this, it really comes in big and shudders down that hallway.
Exactly.
Vince, what was your thoughts about the correlation between the orb and then something moving?
Oh, it's there's always an argument in science, of course, about correlation versus causality. One thing doesn't mean the other. But this is a huge coincidence, of course. And if you were to argue, and I want to take care of some of the skeptics early on, if it was water vapor, for example, which is, sure, there's probably water vapor in the air, but there would be lots of, balls of light, sprinkles or contrasting examples of that, because that beam would be illuminating everything in the area, the infrared light or the light that's present, if it was something along those lines. But yeah, like a flickering oil lamp, or what they used to call ignis fatuus, which is the phenomenon.
Did
of
you just
light.
Swear at me in Swedish?
No, it's it's Latin, actually.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Different years. Christina Lantis popped up and said the light flickering looked like an old oil lamp. That's a great kind of version of that. I didn't even think of that, Christina. You're right. But tell us about the Hibbert verse.
Ignis fatuus is a reference to spirit lights that you would see, or spirit fire, or fool's fire, as they would call it, because the myth behind it is that these fires would lead people into the deeper into the swamp or the dark forest in the woods, usually illuminated by evil spirits, demons, or elves, depending on what particular myth or folklore you're listening to. And it would lure you in there. So ignis fatuus means fool's fire and in Latin. And sort of that flickering effect always reminds me of those stories of the fool's fire, which are, or in mythology and folklore going back thousands of years, involves spirits of some type or another, basically supernatural or paranormal phenomenon. So the oil lamp reference is a good reference right there to that. What exactly causes these strange illuminated balls of light or fires or flickering effect? A lot of evidence suggests it's paranormal, supernatural through some unknown medium.
Now, Jim, we're showing you the evidence. You see the shuddering ball of light. You see the hammock move. Then I told you it gets worse. Things get a little weirder. And I showed you the video footage and the bite mark appear on my arm. I want to know, having had your experience on board the ship and seeing that happen, what was your takeaway, especially in that reveal?
It was clearly there was something on board that ship. I mean, there was. I mean, you had the experience. Shane had the experiences. Cindy had the experiences. You guys seen shadows. You with your bite mark, with everything it was mounting up there. I mean, all this had been aboard that ship. We've seen something on there. I mean, it was definite that there's something on board that ship. It just proves that we're not nuts, because we're actually bringing forth the information to everyone. Yeah, this ship is haunted. There are things that are on there, and it affects people, different people in different ways, I guess. I mean, they might have seen you as an intruder. You know, may have seen you as an enemy combatant of another. You know, in other words. One of those kids on there, you know, they're gonna try to push me around while I get back to doing your cabin boy duties. They've probably seen all three of us when we were there back in 74 like that. I don't know.
Wisteria Whisper asks, did you hear any footsteps at night? Yes, we did. We heard it going on above us, below us. It was like tracking us through the ship, like it was trying to draw us to certain places. That's why we broke up during that. Now, I want to talk. I love our viewers, because I love the fact that they watch on a big screen TV. They're watching every variance, looking for something we might have missed. Now, two episodes, one in season two, The Phantom Hand, and then this episode, are the two that have driven me the most crazy. In the Phantom Hand episode, okay, we talk about this Phantom Hand. Everybody wants to know why, when Shane was in the pit, and quickly you see this thing dart at the end of the pit. It was so fast, we couldn't properly cue up the video to show it and highlight it. It went so fast, it was hard to discern what it was that we saw down there. The arm reaching through the wall was spectacular enough, and it matched other sightings and other issues. But just do me a favor, folks. Send us the emails. Point out the points. Just try to reel back the, I can't believe you assholes didn't even notice this, and you call yourself paranormal investigators. You know, we don't mention everything that we see, because some of it we cannot tell you exactly what it was. I don't know that wasn't Shane going like this and blocking the IR light behind him at some point, which made it appear like something moved. So we weren't comfortable enough, and we couldn't assess what that was. So we passed it. But this episode from season one is the one that drove me the most crazy, because there is a moment when Shane is down in the hull of the brig area of the ship, and I leave him alone. And I tell him, don't run away. Don't get frightened. Talk to this. Try to get information, which is a lot easier said than done. There is some ambient light on the decks above that floor, but not in the brig. It is flipping dark. That's why when you see Shane, you forget, because it's so lit up. That's IR light for the camera to see Shane. He can't see him. So when he's doing this and his arms are out in front of him and he can't see, he could just see small variances of something moving around down there. And it was enough to really freak him out. But when Shane leaps up and starts to move, everybody and their brother has pointed out the magic light that appears and apparently tries to signal us that there's something there. And why didn't we mention it? And how could we have not seen this? And blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm going to show you, folks. I actually videotaped it for you. So tonight we can address this. We're going to take a look at it in two different forms. I'm going to play the full video clip real quickly. You're going to notice that it'll be over in the corner of the screen when he gets up where his arm once was. You're going to see this sudden flickering of light, and then it stops. Then I'm going to do a zoom in so you can see it even better, and you'll understand why we didn't talk about this. So here is the first play of it. Okay, so you see it. It's quick. When he gets up right where he was, you see this little flicker of light pop on and off. Now let's take another quicker, closer look at that. Hopefully, now that you've watched this piece of video, But Dave, we're listening to the podcast on Friday. I'll give this video to our webmaster so we can put it up under the news section for today, so you can go find these little video clips. I'll put them up there for you to examine. You'll notice specifically in that one, it's exactly what we've been telling people. When Shane was sitting down, the IR light cannon was aimed at him, so the camera's focused on him. When he leaps up and moves, the IR light now can go deeper into the cavernous part of the ship. And what it's doing is it's pinging off of a piece of debris on the floor. Could have been a nail head, could have been a small piece of glass. It could have been any kind of little debris. But the reason it seems to pulse is because the IR light hits it, and it lights up, and then the camera's trying to focus, and then it realizes that's not anything, and it focuses back on Shane. So it's just an artifact of the camera and the lighting. So it was not a ghost. I don't know if people thought maybe Shane was squishing it, and it, he had somehow squished Tinkerbell under his hand, and when he jumped up, her last few flickers of light before she powered off, or what they were seeing. But we do appreciate you guys pointing out moments when you see things that we may not have noticed. So thank you for doing that. Just try to be a little bit more polite and understanding and realize there's so much that goes on in the show. Plus, sometimes when we're looking on a computer monitor and something big draws our attention, we're human. We may miss something on the peripheral, and we might not have noticed another shadow move. In the episode we did on Franklin Castle, I was so focused on us at the Ouija board that I didn't even notice the spirit appear behind Shane's shoulder sitting on that stairwell and then slowly fade out. We had to watch it, I think, four or five times before Shane's like, stop looking at the Ouija board, look behind me. And that shows you how easily your eyes can be deceived. So that's just something to consider going forward. But, you know, obviously Shane saw something, and you're saying again, now, Dave, it's dark down there, very dark. How is Shane seeing anything? Well, he does have an IR camera light pointing at him. Our eyes may not be able to perceive light from it, but our eyes are perceiving a different variance in light. And if something's moving in front of him, blocking that IR light, that may be the variance that he sees as a shadow. And he's hearing something moving around him. And I felt really bad because he scrambles off to the corner. That's got to be terrifying when you're in a pitch black room and you don't even know where you're going at this point. He told us afterwards, he said, I thought I just backed up and moved over like a foot. He didn't realize he moved like 7 feet over to the side, and he was in a totally different part of it until we came down there with our flashlights. And I remember when we first hit him, he's like, how the hell did I get over here? And at first we're like, what do you mean? How did you get over here? Did you a port to a different part of the ship? And he's like, no, I just didn't think I moved this far. And then we checked the video to make sure he didn't zip through like a wormhole. But it was really kind of creepy for him to be down there. And then we kept hearing things while we were there discussing what was going on. And it felt like it was getting thicker, like the air. And this is 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and it should have been cool. It was quiet. We shouldn't have felt it. Instead, it felt more oppressive. It felt thicker. It felt like something was not happy that we were there. Jim, let me ask you, you've been investigating the paranormal for a very long time as well. What do we think this dark force is? Is it just one really mad ghost? Is it a conglomerate of many fragments of sailors that were aboard this that are just kind of, they hated their job, they hated being out there, they hated doing these things? Or do you think that there is something demonic aboard that ship?
Well, what I experienced back in 74, and even what I experienced that night when we did the first interview, I think it's a culmination of a lot of things. I think it's multiple layers of the parts from the original Constellation from the 1700s and the 1854 ship that we have today, which has those parts. Everything is, like you said, the stone cape theory, things in that nature. It's all boiled into it. All this energy that was on board there, you know, from the Revolutionary War aspect, the War of 1812, the quasi war that we had with France, because we refused to pay our debts. In other words, and up to the American Civil War, but also you had. The ship was also used as a flagship during World War II. believe it or not. And it was actually up in Boston and until it was donated to Baltimore. It was actually war surplus. So you have all these men that might have been on board there, didn't like the living conditions. They had to stay on board. You have all this anger inside of you. You know, the
security, anxiety, yeah,
anxiety, the hate of other guys. You can't stand being around if you're cooped up with a bunch of guys for months on end on the open seas. And when they were out there going after the blockade runners of the slave trade at the time, you got to figure when they were sailing towards Africa at the time, that took months, literally. I mean, because of wind conditions and things of that nature to get there. How would you like to have a commander come down there and bark at you for just because you didn't change your shirt or you didn't button the, right. a certain button? They were prim and proper, and we wanted to follow that protocol. Maybe you got tired of the rations on board. I mean, admittedly, they used salted meats, and you know, they had grog, wherever they had to try to take and eat the same thing over every day. So you have this. It's another flashback.
It's miserable. Yeah, it just sounds miserable.
And you got to figure with the sanitary conditions on board these ships at the time, they weren't the best. Right. I mean, they're using seawater, but then all you know that's if they took a bath, which might have been maybe every 2 weeks, maybe a month. So you got to figure with these guys, they were pretty ripe on board, and we're in the same clothes all the time. So you have there's this multiple layer that's on there, but also could there also be with the instances with those cabin boys being violated? You have that add into it,
right?
I mean, that's a whole nother thing. Then you have those who are with the privateers, as we know, or free agents, what they were, because a lot of them, they already had no allegiance. They were just looking for a quick paycheck, if you want to look at it that way. They also were running from the law. I mean, they may have been rapists, murderers, robbers. You know, they're bringing things in there. Let's not say that there may be deaths that weren't even accounted for on board there. I mean, may have had stabbings or beatings on there, and that blood from the victims, even though they might not have died, had already stained those decks. So there again, you got that anger, angst, the hatred, everything that's on there. So with everything, with all the school kids coming on board, things of that nature, is that stirring that up, and all of a sudden, hey, there's fresh meat. Let's go after these guys.
Well, right. And you're talking, you're bringing an interesting point that there's all these people that come there now feeding the paranormal that are interested because of that. Is it drawing other transitory spirits? Vince, what do we know about elementals? Obviously, we know there are earth elementals and tree and rock and such. Water is a powerful element itself. Are there dark elementals, or are they not evil or good? They're chaotic, neutral kind of energies, but it feeds everything else and kind of taints the water, if you will.
Well, it sounds like you answered your own question there.
Thanks for joining us then, Vince.
It's neutral. Right. It's really, according to a lot of the legends and myths associated with elementals. And remember, when I say legends and myths, I'm not dismissing it. There's a background for all beliefs and ideas that evolve over time. It's the evolution of ideas. All right. So what our ancestors might have thought were, were tree elements and tree elementals and water elementals and things like that, we might recognize with a more, modern interpretation of it. Back then you had tree dryads and water spirits and things like that. And elementals were these ambiguous forms. These would have been called diamonds, or it's like demons, but with the D-A-E-M-O-N-S or similar spelling, which were a place between the earth, the spiritual, like ghosts and hauntings and things like that, and a more divine place, heaven with gods and angels and things on those lines. So these diamonds were what we would call elementals today, or they might have called elementals not that long ago. But they would have been neutral. Their motivations unknown to us, or at the very least indifferent to what we want to do. So And I want to also mention, you mentioned a few times the power of water. And there was a few years ago, he passed away in 2014, but a few years ago, there was a Japanese businessman and researcher named Masaru Emoto, who did research into the idea that water has memory. And he created this artwork and did a lot of research into the idea that there is molecular memory in water. And that's a very popular theory in regards to haunted ships and things like that, that the memories of those who lived on those ships and died on those ships are somehow have passed those memories of themselves into the water itself, because that gets into it's water resistant and keeps you from sinking. It's not, you know, that water over decades, centuries, becomes part of the ship itself. You know, it becomes an element of that ship. Yeah, and salt water, yes, does act like a big battery, as a matter of fact, under the right conditions.
Sylvie Ward bringing that up, yeah, and salt water can act like one big battery. You've got the perfect, and I think we mentioned it, you've got the perfect storm. You've got the psychically scarred ship where there was a lot of trauma, a lot of anxiety and angst, where there were deaths, and you watched your shipmates. You know, I'm sure it had to be rough, and then one of your buddies falls asleep on guard and is cut in half and then blown apart. That's got to mess with everybody on board as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because they've all got to be thinking, oh, God, how long am I signed on for, right? This has got to be pretty terrifying to be a part of. I know, Vince, you collect a lot of stories. What are some of the other stories that you know of the Constellation that stood out to you regarding aspects of the paranormal?
Well, there's a famous story of going back into the 1960s. There's a story of a tourist who went on the ship, and he was just walking around the ship. And this is how normally this goes when you visit the Constellation. You buy a ticket. You go nowadays. You go through their wonderful gift shop, and you go up the plank onto the ship. And then you do a self-guided tour. There's lots of plaques around. But back in those days, there was nothing. You walked up on the ship, and you just toured yourself. Well, while he was going down below decks, he came across a young sailor who was extremely versed in the history of the ship. He brought him around, told him stories, and this is where Captain such and such, this is where private, you know, I don't remember what they call a sailor, but a young sailor, the sailor hung out. This is the brig. This is the where they cook the food and so on. Super knowledgeable about everything. Was talking about the wars, the battles, the slave trade and things like that. And brought him up to the top and, you know, said goodbye. And on the way out, the tourist talks to the person running the ticket stand. And says, you know, I got to tell you, whoever that is on the ship, who that reenactor you have, who tells those great stories, that was amazing. I was really impressed by his knowledge. And they're like, we don't have a reenactor on the ship. You know, there's no one working that does that. And this is back. They have those now, but back then he didn't. You know, and so they ran onto the ship and could not find this person anywhere. You know,
that was similar to the Merchant's House Museum that we visited in New York City in season two. People would be touring the house. The docent stayed downstairs and you'd get to walk around, and many of them would come down and say, boy, your tour guide upstairs is amazing. He knew the entire family history. They're like, there's nobody else working here. Who did you talk to? And they go up and there's nobody there to be found. So it's really interesting that it's like the ghosts are demanding to be heard and want to be known. Let me see. There was an interesting message here. I wanted to see if I can. This is a good point. Laurie Torres, do any of the locations have live webcams that we can watch to see if we can catch any evidence ourselves? You know, Laurie, I have tried to help a lot of these locations that are struggling, and I've suggested put some like Surratt Tavern, the Merchant's House Museum, some of these historic places, put cameras up in each room and charge $4 a month for people to have access and make a contest. Give away $100 a month to the best piece of evidence caught. Have people watch it, timestamp it, tell you, you know, screen cap it when they see it, send it to you, and then you guys give $100 away a month. You should have no problem getting that. But I would love to see more independent paranormal investigators being able to do this, because look, NASA and other space observatories have asked amateur astronomers to look to the skies and note these things and make things known. They've also allowed you to plug into the radio telescopes to listen for signals. So why not allow independent paranormal investigators to watch the footage, jot notes of anything they think is interesting, and send it in? So, Lori, I hope some of these locations will take that, because there are a lot of them that are great that are losing losing themselves, and they're being shut down because history isn't as interesting, unfortunately, to a lot of people anymore. I think that's why more people are gravitating to the paranormal at these locations, is they realize they can tell a good story and then wrap it up with a ghost story. And people really seem to enjoy that. And I hope more and more will find that, you know, vein to entertain and educate people all at the same time. And Mark G says, excellent comparison, Dave. Spot on, should be done. I just like when anybody agrees with me, so I'm going to throw that up. Thank you very much. Are being bitten and having a physical mark left on the body, obviously that is a sign of something intelligent. A lot of people would jump to a demon. They would jump to something dark. I really felt like it was a kid trying to get my attention. I got pissed off. I stopped playing with him. I stopped following him around the ship. I wasn't doing that. I was distracted by what I thought was blood dripping down on my head. And, you know, I could hear Cindy kind of dealing with what she was dealing with. And then the footsteps start up around me. So it was like a whirlwind of activity. And then this thing just clamped on me. I really felt like it was just like, damn it, pay attention. I'm trying to show you something. And that really shook me. I got to tell you, before doing Holzer Files, this whole stuff about people getting scratched and bit and pulled and knocked down, I had a hard time swallowing. I got knocked on my ass at Whaley House. I got bit in the arm on this ship. You know, I've had encounters now where I've had physical contact that way. How rare do you think true physical contact is, Jim?
Well, I've had several experiences. I actually had one that happened at Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia. I had went up into, which is Casemate 5. In reality, that was where they held many of the Confederate soldiers in there at the time. But they tell the story in a different way in certain instances. And I basically went in, and being a Confederate descendant myself, my great-grandfather served under Stonewall Jackson, was in prison at Point Lookout, which is another haunted location, which we'll talk about at another time.
Okay.
But going in there, I actually antagonized and just to get things going, just to see what it would do. And we were told they had some Yankee soldiers who basically had either deserted ranks or they had done some things. And the story is that one of them had raped and murdered a young girl. So I went after this particular individual, in other words, and it was playing with us with the K2 meters and with the millimeters and everything else that we had at the time. And so I decided with the group I was going to take and go further into the casement alone, while they said they have these benches or bed there for reenactors, and they also have Boy Scouts come over and stay there to raise money for the fort. And I went down and I had basically provoked, in other words, and which I normally don't do, but this was a controlled experiment on this point. And I had basically broke wind. Well, basically, how this actually worked was.
Well, we know how that works, Jim. I don't need you to get that in depth.
Well, I'll go into depth on a little bit before that. But basically, at first, I said, well, you know what? I'll take one for the team. You want to pick on somebody your own size. I'll take one for the team. I'll take, and what I did was I basically mooned this entity. I said, well, by the way, I said, you know what? Here you go. And I blew him a kiss, in other words. Well, on the ride back to Baltimore after we had been up there for almost 24 hours, at this point, doing investigations and things.
Uh-huh.
Heading back to Baltimore, and all of a sudden, I had this burning sensation. It's just like, I couldn't sit right.
Okay.
So I looked over at a former investigator of ours, and I'm like,
now we know why they're a former investigator.
Former investigator, yeah. And it's just like, she says to me, she says, what's wrong with you? I said, my burns. She said, that's what you get for provoking. Guess what? The next time you go to Philadelphia and go up there at Fort Mifflin, you're going to get a T-shirt. Yeah, I've been to Fort Mifflin, and all I got was cornhole. So it's a sick joke. It's an inside joke. But it was a controlled experiment. I would never do it again. But I've been shoved on investigations. I actually we did one with the former investigators. It was a friend of hers that she graduated. This individual had graduated about 2 years after the former investigator did, and we did the investigation. And I was going to get a piece of equipment out of the car, and it's a split foyer, and I'm coming down the stairs, and it was something like it hit my shoulder blades. And it's not happened to me once, but twice. I've had that happen up at the Burlington County Prison in New Jersey on the investigation. I actually got shoved and actually had handprints on my shoulder blades.
Wow.
Both times. So, I mean, I've had that done. Bites. We've had bites before. I've actually got bitten in the leg. All of a sudden you can watch as the marks disappear, which when you try to get with the camera, you can actually watch this thing disappear. So, I mean, there are strange things that's happened.
What about you, Vince? Have you farted at any ghosts lately?
No. Clearly what Dave had, what Jim had experienced with is what commonly referred to as an ass goblin, I think.
an ass goblin. Oh, good God. That is wild. What are your takes about physical attacks? I'm cautious because, again, it's easy to jump to the conclusion it's evil or it's a demon. A lot of times I think it's just a really frustrated spirit. If you're trying to be heard, you're being antagonized, all of these things happening. What can we possibly do to get through? I wonder if it's just frustration, like a little kid. They get so... they just bite to get that attention. What do you think, Vince?
Well, yeah, physicality in the paranormal, it happens, of course, but it is one of the rare phenomena. You can go to, like you guys, like all of us, if we've been to dozens, hundreds, and thousands of places, the odds of you encountering something like that increase, of course, statistically speaking. But most people can go on a few dozen investigations here and there and never encounter something like that, because it is a rare thing. It's a higher energy phenomenon, and most places don't have that level of phenomenon occurring to it. Most places are pretty mundane as far as if you consider the paranormal and mundane. That is.
Right. Right.
Pretty calm and peaceful and not interactive to that level because it requires a certain degree of energy like that. The manifestation of a physical presence is very difficult to come across or to manifest in the first place because you're talking about how is a non-tangible thing, a ghost that can pass through walls and things like that, right?
Right.
just joining in and now you're ass goblin.
Valerie Wright calling me out on that one.
but yeah, like how does a you have to watch the video later, listen to the podcast
yes,
later.
That's right.
To pick up on that. It's like how does a non-tangible thing manifest the ability to actually bite, push, grab, and other or poke and other. How many times have any of us been touched on the shoulder,
right?
Or had our hair played with, or felt a someone breathe on the back of our neck, like because they got too close. It's a question that I challenge a lot of paranormal investigators with is: are you experiencing the actual physicalness of being touched or bitten or pushed, or are you in experiencing the memory of someone else having gone through that? All right.
Oh, like it's, medical intuitive or a medical empath.
That's right. It's the concept's called memory possession, where there's these embedded imprints of memory in the area. And when you walk into it, and of course you're familiar with a psychosomatic response, where if you believe something strong enough, it happens, and so it creates this weird sort of thing. Like, what if someone in the past, Dave, had been bitten on the arm at that ship, and you are experiencing their memory of having been bitten, and it manifests as an actual physical mark on your arm? Are you going through a process of memory possession, or is there, or as some people imply, is there an actual experience in which a physical mouth manifests, or some etheric teeth manifest and actually bite down on you? And it creates all these sorts of interesting philosophical and scientific questions, because the physical manifestation is affected by atmosphere, gravity, things like that. If a hand manifests in the air, why does it just fall down to the ground? Because it has mass and weight. Or, these are questions that are constantly being asked by paranormal researchers, parapsychologists, and psi field researchers. And I don't know if you remember, we actually talked about the concept of amateur astronomers in one of our previous talks on Darkness Radio. And and one of the terms that the parapsychologists had determined or developed for amateur parapsychologists was psi field researcher, the equivalent of an amateur astronomer.
It's all great insights. And you brought up a lot of watching people and they're like, yeah, boy, I hadn't thought of that. That's an interesting insight. So that is wild. What if somebody got bit during that, during their time there? What if one of the sailors was bit by the 10-year-old or 12-year-old boy that they were mistreating? Mm-hmm. And I just caught that psychic wave. Sarah Youssef asks, how do you double down on protection once a person is physically attacked? I think personally for myself, I do a lot of prayer work and energy work, and I just demand that they don't come. They're not allowed to come with me. They have to stay there. I do prayer and healing. I ask that that I'm cleansed, that this energy stays behind, or that something, God sends forth the angels to help find these lost souls. That's kind of the way I pray on it. What do you recommend for people that have been affected physically by the paranormal? If you can each give me a quick soundbite on what you think is the best way to protect yourselves.
Jim, you want to handle that first?
Well, I think that on that aspect there, you always have somebody of the clergy, have them on speed dial on your cell phone. That's one aspect. We actually have several people that we come in contact with. You also have someone that might be there that may be of the clergy that we actually have one as a member of our team. We do a quick prayer before we go in. We bless all the equipment, and then we go into the location. And if someone does get attacked like that, we get that person out of that situation. We try to we debrief them to make sure that there's no physical injuries and things of that nature. But also, if they are being attacked, to try to we do prayer. Even with the Reiki master, I mean, there are people who have their ifs and whatnot with them. It's always good to have anything you have in your arsenal, to prepare the protection, prayers, protection stones, any kind of crosses, or if you carry the Star of David or some other type of religious object, anything there. It's always good to have a kit take with you. And that's what we have with our team. We have a lot of different aspects. Me having Native American blood in my ancestry, I do smudging. I do different things. So I mean, you take and you weigh all that into that, and each individual case is going to be different, of course.
Right.
But you have to make sure that person is well protected, and make sure that everyone goes home safe and sound.
That's my important aspect, is I just want to make sure I'm not bringing something home to affect my wife or children. Vince, what do you suggest for people for protection?
Well, All those suggestions that Jim just did are really, really good. And like he just closed with, it's based to some degree on your that's funny.
Ed Hinkins.
Yep. Always have your own personal canary to send in first.
Right. Ed Hinkins, for those of you listening, sent a message. It says Dave protects himself by sending Shane. However, you'll notice I always get attacked when Shane's not around, so I'm the one getting the brunt of it. But go ahead. You were saying about just kind of protecting yourself and what you should do for these situations.
Yeah. So, some people have there's a difference between the paranormal and the supernatural. All right. The paranormal has a more quasi scientific application. The supernatural involves everything else outside of that perimeter. You can deal with angels and more spiritualistic aspects. I'm very knowledgeable, and we've talked about this before, and not only technology, but also seances and spiritualism and how things, and they've always had an idea of how to protect yourself, visualizing in your mind a pillar of light. As you said earlier, Dave, the idea of an angelic reinforcement, or your ancestors, like thinking about someone from your past who passed on, who also can lend you spiritual energy to give you protection. For those who have a more, that makes them uncomfortable for some reason, or they have a more scientific outlook. There's changing atmospheric conditions. That's one of the scientific theories of why smudging works, not because it's spiritual, although that's definitely a possibility, but because you're adding an element into the atmosphere that distributes the spiritual energy or psychic energy that's there. You have these particulates through smoke and smudging into the atmosphere, which is certainly a well-documented theory that's as plausible as anything else.
Right.
So these are ways of protecting yourself, all sorts of different possibilities.
Just make sure you're careful when smudging, because I did an investigation in Stillwater, Minnesota, and we did some smudging afterwards, and I'm driving home and I had a sneezing fit, and you'll appreciate this as a cop, Jim, right? I'm driving on the road. And I'm so my car weaves a little bit, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden the cherries go on. He pulls me over and he goes, "You're kind of weaving." I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry. I started sneezing." And he goes, "Yeah, I can see why. You want to step out of the car?" And I'm like, "What?" I had no clue. And then he goes, "Were you smoking weed tonight?" And I'm like, "Oh, you're not going to believe this, but I'm a paranormal investigator and we were smudging." He goes, "Is that what you kids are calling it these days? Smudging?" So he had to open up my trunk. He found my toolkit of all my paranormal equipment and found the big smudge stick. I said, "That's either the biggest Bob Marley joint you've ever seen in your life, or it's a smudge stick." And he started laughing. He goes, "All right, Ghostbuster, drive safely," and sent me on my way. But you do have to be careful, because that can come off horrible. Kelly's Unexplained. Kelly, good friend of ours. I was just a guest on her show earlier this week. "Do you use crystals?" I'm not big on crystals. I know Cindy does. I, to be truthful with you, I've gone out and gotten a blessed rosary at every location, and I carry them in my pocket. I also have a crucifix with my mom's ashes that was blessed. I wear a couple of different blessed rings. So I try not to telegraph to them, "Don't bother me." Because I got to guess, if I'm a ghost, am I going to try to communicate with the guy that's holding a Bible and holy water and a cross and and looks like he's terrified to talk to you? Or am I going to talk to the person who's open? So I always try to be as open as I can to the spiritual side. But I do want the dark side to kind of know, you don't have dominion over me. This, I'm not going to allow this. And by setting that intention, that's an important part of my element of being careful when we investigate. Guys, I don't want to keep you much longer. I know we are approaching our 90 minute mark here, a little over actually. I want to remind everybody, next week, The Haunting of Lambert Castle, with Team Resurrects Hans Holzer's investigation to a mysterious castle in Paterson, New Jersey. Our exploration of the lavish mansion reveals a woman's recurring nightmares. that may have a supernatural source in the dwelling's dark history. That's next week. Make sure that you go back and review that episode on Travel Channel, or you can watch it on Discovery Plus. And we'll be back here with some special guests next week to discuss that episode and take your questions. I want to thank all of the great viewers and listeners that have chimed in with questions and thoughts tonight. Thank you so much. I was going to mention the rosaries. I use them once, I put them away. This was my protection here. I put it away like a condom. I'm not going to use it again and again, right? Every place I go, I've got my holy prophylactic to protect me. But I'm thinking about putting them out there for helping different organizations. So I might start offering those up. Hell, I might even just offer them up to raise money. My wife is a Crohn's patient, and Humira's flipping expensive, so we might just be selling some of the artifacts off from Holzer Files to help with that. But keep watching my social media pages for some other items, and I do have a few more haunted dolls I'm going to be throwing out on my Facebook page soon. So if you're interested, you can bid and be a part of it. Vince, if people are interested in connecting with you, seeing one of your magic shows, seeing one of your lectures or talks or tour, how can they find you best?
Well, the best way to do it is just go to VinceWilsonMagic.com, because you can see all my links. And there's also GhostTech.com. If you want to do stuff at Baltimore, of course, you want to go to, for paranormal investigations, go to Jim's website. And I do ghost tours and stuff like that. And occasionally, when all this stuff is over, me and Jim can hang out again and go on some paranormal investigations again. But I do ghost tours. There you go. Prism. .net. Do some paranormal investigating again too, and do some lectures there. But VinceWilsonMagic.com, you can find all the stuff I do. And I because I do some investigations through a magical sense as well. And I probably will be doing some, if everyone's interested, if you could send me some messages saying I would definitely attend this, I might do another virtual seance, which I've been doing the past year. So
very cool. I love that. And Vince, you're always a great go-to in this field. So thank you for coming on and joining us. Thank you for being a part of that episode as well.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Thank you.
And are you going to be out at Phenomenology?
I haven't gotten an invitation yet, but we'll see.
All right. Phenomenology2020.com. Go check it out. Yes, I know it's 2021, but they had planned it originally during the pandemic or before the pandemic. But this is going to be taking place later on this year. Phenomenology2020.com, or just go to darknessevents.com. You'll see all the events I'm going to be at, the events Shane and Cindy will be joining me at. So that's all there. Now, Big Jim, if people are in the Baltimore area dealing with the supernatural, the paranormal, they're frightened, who are they going to call, Jim?
They're going to call the Paranormal Research and Investigation Society of Maryland, or better known as PRISMD. We're at www.prismd, that's PRISMD.net.
PRISMD.
PRISMD.net. And also, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm a photographer as well. And I've got... I'm a Renaissance man. I do a lot of different things, but with the team itself is with PRISMD, and we're going to be at Phenomenology. We'll be up there. Stop by, say hi. I mean, we're glad to talk to anybody, and you can contact us any time of the day. Actually, on our website, we have an email. If you want to shoot an email to us and give us a detailed account and give us your contact information, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible.
I appreciate that. Again, folks, if you're interested in getting your hands on my package, just remember, all you have to do is email me, dave@darknessradio.com. The autograph set includes the book, the Holzer Files card, and the Darkness Radio decal, $20 plus $5 shipping and handling at dave@darknessradio.com. Be kind to one another, love one another, and remember to tune in again next week for more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. For Tim Dennis, you've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.